Bear with me, please. Okay, it looks like a lot, but really it's not, okay? It says big print. I thought for sure that I might be able just to share without the papers, but I had to write it down and that. I'm going to introduce myself in a couple different ways, so just hear me out, and I'll just start. Good afternoon and welcome. I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Caroline Reed, and I'd like to take a bit of this time to share some of my upbringings. I'm honored to be here and share my story, so here it goes. Born into a dysfunctional family, I am the youngest of five siblings. My mother, Mary, of a Romanian background, came from a very strong, hardworking, and religious family. She herself could write a book on her life and all that she had experienced. I am proud to say that she is still alive and in great health, living on her own, still playing her music instruments, lots of spiritual readings, and tending to her houseplants. She's going to be 92 this January. My father, well, this is a hard one to talk about. Oh, okay. Is this better? Okay, let's talk about. I really never got to know him. He himself was a full core alcoholic, and my mother divorced him when I was around 9 years old. He never did show up to pick us kids up for visitation, never. He never supported our mother at all either. He was basically taken right out of the family picture. Remembering my childhood and growing up into adulthood. From a very young age, I recall our parents arguing frequently, my sister and I having to hide underneath a bed or in a closet. The eldest brother, Dale, God rest his soul, would remove us from the home as often as he could so we would not witness the full-blown out arguments. However, there were times that we did. My other brother, Brian, would try breaking up the arguments, and this usually led into the police being phoned and coming to our home. They always removed Dad from the house, but he would come back at some time, and we were always unsure what state of mind he would be in. I also recall our father hiding his alcohol, driving intoxicated with having us children in his car. One time I remember catching him drinking vanilla from a bottle in our kitchen cupboard. I always wondered what the heck he did this, but later learned that apparently vanilla can give you a buzz. Who knew? Well, he did. My parents were divorced, and our mother took full responsibility of all five of us children. She housed us, clothed us, and fed us. She did this by working three jobs at one time. It was sometime later that we were told that our dad was gay. Now, this something back then was hard for me to take, that a man being married and having five children would be gay. It took me years to finally appreciate everything my mom did for our family, and when I did, I finally thanked her for that. I was still quite young and can recall other disturbances in the house. My other brother, Brian, was very abusive, vocally and physically. He mostly took out the abuse on my mom, but us siblings also. We all had our fair share. This abuse was very often, and once again, the police were called to our home. After a while, we did not have to give our address, as the police knew us our home by our last name. I and the family learned to live on pins and needles, as one never knew what Brian would do if and when he showed up in our home. I was absent from school numerous days, as a lot of sleep was disturbed or even missed out because of the family violence. I only remember living in fear day and night. I learned to keep my mouth shut, as this kind of living was not something one would share with anyone, nor would you want anyone to know. Growing up, I did have a lot of friends, but rarely did I have them over at our house because of the way we lived. When I started high school, I recall a few teachers asking me, "Oh, do you have a brother named Brian?" It was kind of embarrassing, but Brian was the one who managed to bully his teachers and also pick fights with the police. He once even threatened his then-girlfriend living at our home with their youngest son, this is my mom's house, threatening to kill her and us. The police were called, and I can picture this clearly. The police barricading the complete street in front of our home and the back alley. Brian was found walking the street with a gun. Just what if? What if we were home and without the police? It gives me chills to this day. So many, many times there were incidents with Brian and the police all over the city. My other brother, Garth, was not at home too much. He was a few years older than me, and had a life of his own with his girlfriend, lucky him, but he also had his own private incidents with Brian. So the abuse continued. I felt so sorry for my mom. How she took this, I don't know. Maybe because she was still so strong, surviving a couple of her own brothers passing away when she was younger, back in the old days. Also, when my mom was 13 years old, her father murdered his wife, my mom's mother, and then took his own life. Mom was the youngest daughter out of 14 siblings. She then had to work even harder as a young girl to help with raise the siblings. This is only the beginning of my mom's story, and I seriously can say once again, she could write her own book on her own life. So, as much as I did well in school, getting good grades, I decided to quit high school and find work so I could move out of the home. My sister Marianne graduated from high school and immediately moved to Victoria. I felt at that time, and for a long time, that she ran from the family. She had to escape and not have to face any part of it anymore. Immediately after quitting school, I found a job and moved out of the family home. This, I thought, would finally bring freedom for me, but it was not. Through work, I met some good people who became friends. We started going out for happy hour after work, and that led to drinks during the evening and then into some late nights. Still managed to go to work the next morning with the help of a McDonald's milkshake in hand. I started bar hopping at a very young age, got to know bouncers and the regulars at bar. I dabbled in drugs during my teen years, but was very fortunate that I either did not like what I used or that I did not get addicted to them. One thing for sure was that I would never, ever use a needle, and thank God I didn't. I can say that I had easy access to any drug of choice through my brothers. Now that I was working and outliving the life I moved to another place and started living with my brother Garth and his girlfriend. All was good until one specific evening. The phone rang, my brother answered. Garth came into my room and told me that our mother found our brother Dale hanging in the basement of the family house. Yeah, Dale committed suicide the day before my mom's birthday. I was 18 years old. This was horrific, and I lost total control of myself. Dale and I were the closest in the family. He not only took care of me, but we shared so many good times together. I was devastated. I moved home to be with my mom during this sad time. We also found at this time that my brother Dale was gay, and again, back then in the 80s, it was in the closet, and he had to hide this all, and we had to keep our mouths shut. So needless to say, my brother Brian continued using his anger, and there was more abuse. It wasn't too long after I sought my own living quarters once again and moved out, leaving Mom at risk with brother Brian. I was scared for our mom, and I wondered where she got her strength and courage from to deal with everything that happened to her during her life. I asked her, and her answer was God. She told me that she always prayed and that her faith in God was strong, and I believe this now. Time passed, and life went on. I was 20 years old when I went on my first date with my now husband, Doug. It wasn't long after we were married, and we made our home at Regina Beach. We built our forever home and started our family. We were blessed with two beautiful daughters, Jessica and Brittany. We are so proud of our girls, and we made sure we did everything that parents could possibly do to raise them with respect and love, and of course, to protect them always. Our daughters are now grown up, living lives of their own and following their own dreams. We are truly blessed and very fortunate to know that they have not been affected with an addiction, and if anything, they turn their noses away from drugs and alcohol. Doug and I made sure that our daughters knew that they could come to us whenever they needed help, and they do to this day. This makes us feel that much more proud of them and for ourselves. So when Doug and I built our home and our first daughter, Jessica, was born, my mom decided to move to BC where my sister lived. This hurt me personally, but I was also happy knowing that she was escaping from Brian's abuse. It didn't take too much time after Mom's move that my brother Brian decided to come after me with his abusive behaviors. This nonstop abuse got to the point that I felt like I was a kid again. I couldn't sleep, I was scared all the time, and there were even times that I took our own daughters out of the home to protect us all. My husband, Doug, the strong man that he is to this day, was not scared of Brian, but I was scared of what Brian would do to him or us girls. It got to the point that I was now phoning the RCMP often, and this became so regular that the RCMP became regulars at our home, popping by for coffee and having visits. As the abuse continued, I ended up having to record Brian's calls and also save all the messages he would leave. With his life-threatening threats to Doug and myself, I was finally able to take out a restraining order on him. This only worked for a short time before Brian did show up at the beach and was stopped by the RCMP, whom they found that he was carrying a knife in his boot. This freaked me out, and this living in fear was driving me crazy. My drinking during these years were not so much out of control. Doug and I were happy, and we had our girls to take care of. We worked, we took our girls to activities, we had friends with children, so we would visit with them. Life was good, so I thought. Things were pretty much settled down from Brian's threats and abuse. Doug and I were happy, and both our daughters were content. It was on a Tuesday evening, another evening I will never forget. Our girls were in bed, Doug and I were watching TV, sipping on tea, and I even remember eating Dad's cookies that night. The doorbell rang, and I found it was very strange who would be at our house at this time of night. Doug answered the door, and I heard a female's voice. The two of them entered the living room, and I knew by looking at this person something bad happened. It was a female RCMP officer, and she came to tell us that they found my brother, Garth, deceased. Oh my God, no way. Yes, my brother Garth committed suicide. I lost it. I totally lost it. This could not be happening to our family once again. Garth shot himself in the head. I now had to phone my mother and my sister in BC with this news. This tragedy hit me hard, and I felt guilty. The reason I felt guilty, it was only the week prior to Garth's suicide that he phoned me, and we had a good conversation. He told me that it was done. I immediately took it that his marriage was over because he was in a separation at the time. This was on Friday. He committed suicide the following Tuesday. I only wish I understood what he was saying. Suicide didn't even enter my mind. The guilt was going to haunt me for a very long time, but I would eventually get over it and forgive myself. With this tragedy lays another story all of its own, so I'll leave it as is and move on. So the only surviving brother remaining is Brian, who continued with his threats to Doug and I. I finally built up enough nerve and courage to confront him and did this a few times when finally he backed off. Our family life became happy and busy. Doug and I again both worked, the girls attended school, participated in sports, brownies, dancing, art class, and had a whole lot of friends, which meant a lot of sleepovers and birthday parties. My drinking still was not out of control, so I thought, but one could say I had a problem, as when I did drink, I could suck back a lot, even outdrink some of our male friends. I think my high tolerance to drugs and alcohol could be taken as a warning, but who would have thought? Not me. So this is where I get to begin my story about addiction and my disease with alcoholism. Hello. My name is Caroline, and I'm an alcoholic. I witnessed alcohol at a very young age. I started to drink myself as early as 12 or 13 years old. It did not take too long to learn the fun effects alcohol gave me. Alcohol took away all my hurt and fear I was experiencing and replaced it with power. I hung around with friends who drank, and we would steal booze from their parents to get or get one of my brothers to pull booze for us. After I quit school and started working, drinking became a norm. Alcohol was a social activity during these years, so no one ever questioned one about drinking. I experienced my first accident when I was 17 years old, and thankfully no one was hurt, but some pretty good damage was done to my little car that I loved so much. I was a regular at bars and almost always the driver. There were nights that I got so drunk that I literally would fall down and not be able to get up. We all thought that this was just fun and games. With my brother Brian still abusing Mom, I just worked and drank. I was 19 years old with my second accident. I decided to go to a work event. I drank, I got drunk, and I drove. I remembered driving a few people to a party and dropping them off. I continued to drive home, and approximately 4 blocks from my apartment, I passed out, only to awake to the EMS removing me from the back of my Jeep and rolling me into an ambulance. I also remember the flashing lights of the police. I do not remember the ride to the hospital, but I do remember them wheeling me into emergency and having the police at each side of my bed. The next thing I know, I'm at the police station, taking a breathalyzer and having my fingerprints taken. Oh my God, what the hell have I done? I was scared, and I was so scared, and I was also way above the legal drinking limit. Yikes. And I had that one phone call I was allowed to make, but I postponed it due to as I felt terrible having to let my mother know her baby was in jail. Well, not really in jail, as I begged the officers not to put me in the cells because I was scared to death. After a while, sitting on a bench, I made the call. My brother Brian answered, and he came and picked me up. I was off work for a few days, and when I returned, I was called into the Human Resources Department and asked if I thought I had a drinking problem and if I thought I would need help. This pissed me off, and I pretty much told the employer where to go. I was lucky to have kept that job. I was so thankful that I did not kill anyone, nor did I kill myself. And not only that, I did not lose my license because of the neglect of them not keeping me in the hospital due to some injuries. As time passed, my drinking continued. It just wasn't weekends anymore. It was creeping into weekdays and evenings. Drinking just became a normal activity in my daily routine. I did make sure my family was taken care of. I guess this is what you call a functioning alcoholic. I cleaned house, I did the laundry, I prepared meals, lunches were made, baking was done, yard work was maintained, and decorating for festive events and holidays were done. And I even fit in some serious exercise. Whatever I did, I managed to have a cocktail before, during, or after. It did not matter where we went or whom we were with, but I knew it was going to be a good time for drinking. I kept reminding myself that no matter how I felt that our daughters were top priority and that our family would be happy, healthy, and filled with love, not nothing like I was raised in. So came another accident, number three. A girlfriend and I went to the bar for drinks. After the drinks, we picked up a 40-ounce of vodka and went to a friend's house. As we sat around visiting our friend, he basically told me that I shouldn't be drinking and driving, but of course I said I was fine. When leaving his house, I decided to take a longer route home. We were in this old, ancient, heavy-duty Jeep that we used just around the beach. And I decided to take the longer route home. And I turned a corner, and the Jeep started rocking side by side, back and forth. Bang, we tipped over. Thankfully, we had our seatbelts on, and the two of us were okay. And the 40 of vodka didn't break. We maneuvered. Yeah, that was the happiest thing. We maneuvered out of the Jeep, and I hid the bottle in some bushes. My girlfriend told me to stay put, and she ran home to go get Doug. I decided not to stay put, as I was scared. So I ran on foot, and I ran in the dark of the night and went down to the path by the lake and found a spot, and I just sat, and I cried, and I cried. I could hear Doug and our friend calling out my name, but I did not answer. A few guys that lived in the area where the accident happened came out and helped Doug flip the Jeep back onto its wheels, and Doug drove it home. Somehow, and at some time, I did make it home, but I don't remember anything after that. I became a blackout drinker. With days, months, and years passing by, life seemed to be fine until I noticed myself thinking of a drink as soon as I woke up in the morning. I started to plan my drinking. I would get the girls and Doug off in the morning, I'd go to work, and then I would make sure that I had my alcohol, my mix, my cigarettes at our home, just so I wouldn't have to leave the home or yard. I was going to be in seclusion in my own isolated space, not to be bothered by anyone. I now would like to reintroduce myself. Hello, my name is Caroline, and I am a full-blown out alcoholic. As I was saying, my drinking habits became a daily thought, and these thoughts turned into action and reality. I drank every day. I continued to be productive at work and at home. However, eventually this changed. My time was being consumed with drinking, and my drinking was consuming me. The effects of this also affected my family. My husband and our daughters noticed my frequent drinking and my changes and my changing behaviors. I called myself a happy, sad, mad drunk. I used every excuse I could think of to drink, and I also lied. I started to hide my alcohol, and I also bought alcohol to replace the alcohol that I drank that the husband thought was untouched. What a fool I was. Eventually, my husband started hiding the liquor, but I always found it. Needless to say, this is when I knew deep down inside me that I had a problem, but I would still not admit it. I would cover up my drinking however which way I could. I began isolating myself to the outside world. I knew that when I had the first drink that I was going to be in the pale, and I would not be able to stop. This led to me drinking until I passed out or I blacked out. The family was now concerned for me, and our daughters would avoid me as much as possible. My husband confronted me numerous times that I had a problem. I would not admit again to this. It wasn't too long after that I started to become anxious, very anxious, ending up with panic attacks that scared the crap out of me. It came down to me using paper bags to help me breathe. I became claustrophobic. I spent many nights wide awake, sitting in our rocking chair watching TV. These attacks came more often and more severe. The only thing I found that helped was alcohol, so I thought. I finally went to the doctor and was prescribed some medication, and that helped. I continued my drinking as usual and did not even have a thought to quit. I started to realize what a reclusive person I had become. I did not go out. I lost friends. I lost time living by becoming lazy. My laziness affected my personal well-being, body, mind, and soul. It was quite sad. Life carried on. My drinking continued day and night. I knew I had a problem and started thinking that there was no way I could admit to anyone of this problem. Whenever I poured myself a drink, I sometimes even cheered to myself and said out loud, "I'm an alcoholic, and I know it." I would look in the mirror and see this person I didn't know. The lady in the mirror was desperate and sad. There were times I had suicidal thoughts. I did not think that I deserved to live like this, nor did anyone need me in this shape. I was too scared to do anything to myself, and I also knew how it would hurt others if I was to take such an action. I know this from the experience of having my two brothers commit suicide. Drinking now made my memory fail. I wouldn't remember what I did at times, nor if I did anything to someone. I would wake up with cuts and bruises and not sure how I got them. I knew, though, that they were all self-inflicted from falling or bumping or something. After numerous threats of leaving me from my husband unless I got help, it came time. I was so scared. I was ashamed. I was embarrassed to ask or call for help. I didn't know how to go about it. I hit my rock bottom, and after a good night's binge, I woke up, and before my husband left for work, he gave me his final warning to get help or he's going to leave me. When he left, I paced around for a while before I did it. I pulled out the phone book, and I called AA. I dialed the number. I got a recording. I left messages. I was now in dire straits, and I was panicking. I need help now. I got numbers of some local recovery centers, only to be informed that they were no longer in existence or operation or a recording. I didn't know what to do. So then I recalled some years ago, I went to St. Michael's Retreat for a 3-day getaway. I called there and asked how quickly I could come to the retreat, and I was able to go that day. I threw a bunch of clothes and necessities into a bag. My husband came home and drove me out to St. Michael's. Just before leaving to the retreat, I received a call from a gentleman in AA, and he told me he would see what he could do to get me into a recovery center, but in the meantime, just to go to the retreat, and we would meet the following Monday at a coffee shop. Once at the retreat, I said goodbye to Doug. I got settled in my room and went directly to the library and got books on recovery. The 4 days at the retreat consisted of reading, and more reading, and a lot of praying. It was here, I met a gal, Cindy, whom I later found out is in the program. She was so kind and invited me to a service on Palm Sunday. To this day, Cindy is a very dear friend, and I know I can talk to her about anything. Cindy, if you are here, I love you and I thank you. Before me leaving the retreat, I arranged to meet with one of the friars, and this was the first and very most important thing I'd ever done for myself. I introduced myself to him as, "I'm Caroline and I'm an alcoholic." Doug picked me up and we headed into the city to meet the man from AA on that Monday. The three of us sat and talked for at least 2 hours. I received information on AA and also where meetings were being held. I decided to attend my first meeting that evening, and I wasn't even scared or shy. I walked into the meeting, and when I was asked to share, I did immediately. I just opened up and I let everything out, and what a wonderful release of trapped emotions were gone. This was the beginning of a new beginning to life. I began attending AA meetings 5 to 6 times a week. I went to see an addictions counselor. I did go see psychologists and everything, but I never did find out that was that really helped me. But I did go see an addictions counselor, and Darcy, if you're in this room, thank you. She made arrangements for me to go to Pine Lodge, a recovery center in Indian Head. I spent 28 days there, working hard at releasing of opening up. There was some serious discipline within those walls, and if it wasn't for Pine Lodge, I seriously don't think I would have gotten to where I am today. And Susan, if you were in this room, I thank you also. This stay saved my life. Once back at home, I continued attending meetings. I would constantly read on recovery, healing, hope, faith, and belief. I started to meditate and avoided places and events where there would be alcohol served. It was at one of the rural AA meetings that I started to admire a woman. After seeing her and listening to her share, I knew I wanted her to be my sponsor. I seen her a couple more times before I asked her, and when I did ask her, she agreed. I love this woman. Her strength and wisdom is huge. Dorothy, I know you're here. I just want you to know how much I love you and how grateful I have you in my life. So when it came to going out and someone offering me a drink or asked why I'm not drinking, I outright said that I am an alcoholic. Life started to change quickly. I started to feel good about myself, and I eventually felt and looked better. But one of the most important things I discovered was the love I had for my family, friends, and for living life. I thought when people found out I was an alcoholic that I would be ridiculed. It was totally the opposite. I received praise, compliments, kisses, and hugs. What a beautiful feeling. So it was shortly after being 6 months sober that I attended a meeting, and when I entered the room, I noticed a woman looking at me. Throughout the night, she kept looking at me. When the meeting was over, a member of the meeting came to me and suggested I give her my phone number. At first, I thought there was no way. I am not a sponsor, nor am I ready to become one. He just thought I should pass it on to her in case she needed someone to talk to, so I did. It was within the next couple of days this woman, her name Tara, called me and I immediately went to her house to meet and chat. We discussed our lives with each other, and it was then that I found out she was suffering with a liver disease and she needed a liver transplant. She was on a waiting list. I felt for her and for her family. We became closer and discovered that we had a lot in common. This friendship led into the best friend relationship. My family and her family got closer and closer. It was a few months after we met that I contacted the donor transplant office and gave them my name to be tested to be a donor for Tara. Unfortunately, I was turned down as I needed to be sober for a year. This hurt me. If only I was not an alcoholic, I could have helped her then. But if I wasn't an alcoholic, I would have never met her. Time passed and Tara's health declined. I helped her and her family lots. We visited each other lots, and as watching her health go down just made me feel helpless. It was just over 1 year of my sobriety that I went back to the transplant donor office and asked once again to be tested. They sent me the application forms and I filled them out. Within a month or two, I received a call from the office and I was informed that I had been accepted to be Tara's donor, but had to go through some tests. This was a miracle. Tara and I were the same age, we were the same built, and we were just the same. We shared the same disease, alcoholism. I then had to travel to Edmonton a few times for a lot of tests and a liver biopsy. When this was said and done, they confirmed that I was a match and I was able to give a portion of my liver to Tara. This excited us all, but with Tara's health declining, she also had to go through some tests and healing. We found out a date that the transplant operation was going to take place. A week prior to the operation, Tara and I flew to Edmonton and our husbands were going to... Flew to him and our husbands were going to drive up just before the operation. During this time, Tara and myself had more tests to go through. Tara was not doing well at all. I ended up having to phone an ambulance at our hotel to take her to the hospital, and she was in rough shape. Tara now had to have more tests done, so the operation was postponed. We were devastated. The man came and picked us up and took us back home. After a week at home, Tara and her husband returned to Edmonton for tests, and then her husband came back home to get things in order. Tara remained in the hospital. Daryl, her husband, wasn't even home for 3 days when the hospital called him and suggested he and their family get to the hospital ASAP because Tara was slipping away. When Daryl called me with this news, I drove directly to their home
He was on the phone making flight arrangements. Sorry. He included me in their travel back to Edmonton. Daryl, their two children, myself, flew to Edmonton the following day, and we went directly to the hospital. Tara was in the ICU, and she looked lifeless. She had needles and hoses all around her and in her. Machines were beeping and tears were shed. We were all called in for a meeting with the doctors, the nurses, transplant team members, and social workers. Tara's family had to make a decision to keep her on life support or let her go. It was not easy, but they knew what Tara wanted, and they stuck with that. Tara was going to be taken off life support and let go. Let go to the arms of her angels. We waited in the private room until a doctor came in and told us it was time. None of her family wanted to be with her as it could not take this kind of despair. So I volunteered to be with her. There was no way I was going to let her die alone. I went and sat beside her as the nurses slowly removed tubes and lines from her, then turned off the breathing machine. I talked to Tara, and I sang to her. I prayed to her, I hugged her, and I held her hand. And Tara held my hands ever so gently, so fragile. Within a half an hour, my Tara, my little blue butterfly, was gone. The four of us returned home and had to process this whole situation as it happened within 22 hours. We were so close to making a new life for Tara, but apparently that wasn't meant to be. I was sick with sadness, but I knew that my best friend was no longer in pain, that she was in heaven and was going to meet my brothers. To this day, our family remains close to hers. To this day, I miss her dearly. Sobriety felt good. I looked good. I felt free and I felt loved. Our family life was stronger than ever. I have been given a gift of sobriety, the best gift ever, other than the gift of my husband and our two daughters. I continue to go to meetings, and I also got more involved with AA service work, which was rewarding. Meeting new friends in the program was a genuine gift. Being able to go to a place and share whatever it is one wanted to share was not, and willing to share, and that was not going to be judged. I knew I was in the right place in these rooms. After a meeting, I walked out feeling good. Having positive people around is so pleasant. Releasing any anger, jealousies, fear, and fears cleansed my entire body. If it wasn't for the rooms of AA, I know for a fact that I would not be here today. I would still be an alcoholic, or I would be dead. I know that I have missed sharing other events that happened during my course of life, and I know there are stories that I do not remember but I think I have said enough here right now today. So in conclusion, I thank my higher power God for this new life. It is by the grace of God, the support of my family, friends, and other alcoholics that I look forward to living. I believe in miracles. I believe in dreams coming true. I believe in myself now. I trust my decisions and I do my best to make things right. I live a new pure life and I am able to still go out and have fun without alcohol. I can now be around people and places where alcohol is served or involved, but I do not crave or miss it. I love waking up every morning feeling good and not wondering what I have done the night before. I don't have to worry about spending all the money on the alcohol. I go to church more than I ever did. I pray daily. I get more done in a sober day than I did in a week of drinking. Breathing in each breath is a gift. Everyone in this room is a gift. With me sharing my story here today, if I was able to reach out and help just one person, then my job as an alcoholic has been successful. I have learned that my path in this life of mine was made for me. God chose me and gave me these hard lessons for a reason. I am stronger today, body, mind, and spirit. I have faith and count my blessings each day. I choose to live one day at a time. I release negativity from my life, and when I feel something disturbing coming on, I am now able to stop and say the serenity prayer. I don't focus on meeting the needs of others' people's expectations. I don't care what people think of me. I am who I am, and I am proud of it. With love and gratitude, I pray for the world that we live in today. It's scary. I know that there are many people out there struggling, and if you're one of them, just as I was years ago, reach out to someone, open up, Be honest. It's not easy, but if I can do this sobriety thing, I have faith in you. I'm now sober 5.5 years, and I look forward to all my todays and tomorrows. So to end my story, I just have to let everyone know that my brother Brian, we did make amends with each other. My brother Brian passed away last November due to health issues and alcoholism. This past summer, my sister's husband committed suicide. So I went and spent 2 weeks in BC with her. This was unbelievable and truly sad. My husband Doug had a life-threatening issue over the summer, and we almost lost him. Doug, I love you with all my heart. I thank you for sticking it out with me. I love our daughters immensely and hope they find peace and happiness in their own journey. I know God is at my side always because he has kept me strong through these difficult times. He keeps me focused on today, not yesterday and not tomorrow. He gives me strength to be open and honest about myself. He's just not here for me, but also for all of you. This is my life and this is my story. Thank you.